Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. We're joined by David Fingold, Vice President and Senior Portfolio Manager of Dynamic Funds. And we were talking, Faisal, before the break a little bit about, how David was positioned coming into this, some of the changes that were made, how do you take advantage of it, protect, what areas should you be in? A lot of evidence-based investing, right, versus
Correct.
The emotional stuff
Correct.
That we often hear about when we're talking to people. How do you stay dispassionate or unemotional?
There's
about
emotional investing, and there's also index investing.
Right.
And a lot of people are saying the markets have not made money. Well, David Fingold has.
Yeah.
We have.
Yep.
How do you make money when, you know, the markets haven't made money? And so that's going to now lead us to, you know, in a couple weeks.
Yeah. The election.
We've got the election. So you can't make money if one person wins and the other one doesn't.
David, this election is so polarizing for people. The average investor, when we're talking to people, the just sheer amount of fear of, you know, whichever candidate they don't want to win, if they win, it is game over here. I would love for you to get your opinion as a portfolio manager about how you view what's coming here in the next two weeks.
Well, as a generalization, we view elections as being relatively unimportant. And I know this is very difficult, especially for Canadians to understand, because we have a completely different system than the United States. The U.S. has a system that is really significantly full of checks and balances, and the president has very little power, and Congress has very little power. And there have actually been very few changes to the country since their Declaration of Independence, and they wrote the Constitution. The people get confused by this, but the reality is that the elected Senate, which took place around the year 1900, it used to be a Senate appointed by the state houses, was a pretty big change. And, you know, another pretty big change, was the emancipation of the slaves. But there really has not been a lot of change. I think that's why, you know, people like Warren Buffett, don't worry about politics. It doesn't really mean anything. And I happen to agree with them. I don't believe that anybody should be positioning a portfolio for an election because there's really no outcome that can dramatically change things. The strangest thing about this, of course, is that statistically the market does better when the Democrats are in power, which is one of the reasons why I'm just so confused about the people who are worried about Biden. Now, I don't, happen to agree with Mr. Biden's policies, but that's irrelevant. My job is to be unemotional. And the statistics are it does Democrats are in power. And the market's done perfectly well with the Republicans in power, just not quite as much a profit. You know, I think the other part of it is it's also important to understand when you make your investments, don't make politically levered investments. I mean, there are certain industries that are controversial. And you know, for example, I have, you know, again, my personal opinions about gun control don't matter, but everybody understands the Democrats are very much in favor of gun control, the Republicans very much against it. If there's a Democratic president, then people may rush out to buy guns. They certainly did when the Democrats were in power the last time, and when the Republicans are in power, nobody rushes out to buy another gun. So that's a very politically exposed industry. So again, we're simply not participating in that industry for the simple reason that there's going to be another presidential election 4 years. There's a congressional election every 2 years. Every 6 years, potentially every seat in Congress and the Senate can turn over. And when you're talking about a politically volatile industry in terms of people's approval of that industry, I just figure it's not worth it because we make our money by picking good companies that can compound returns over time, which means we need to own them for multi-year periods to get those compound returns. So we'll just avoid the really, really politically sensitive industries. And they're very few.
So let's take a look going forward now from the companies that you're seeing, and there might be a list that you're looking at that potentially could be the new companies in the portfolio. What are your expectations of where things are headed for 2021?
Well, we expect, look, first of all, we're in a recession. That's, you know, a simple statement of fact. The National Bureau of Economic Research said so, and their word is basically the word of God on that matter. Nobody else is allowed to make that determination. They've said that it may well be the shortest recession ever, which means that it may have ended August 31st or July 31st. If it ties the record, for the shortest ever, it ended September 30th. The shortest expansion ever is 12 months, which means that the economy is going to grow, even if we get the shortest expansion ever, well into the second half of next year. So when faced with a growing economy, we want to be invested in cyclical businesses where there's upside. So if you contrast what we were doing during March and April and May, where the economy was slowing and we had more of a focus on defensive issues, and you would have seen a much higher proportion of healthcare within our portfolio, and also maybe even technology businesses with more resilient more resilient earnings. We're looking for more cyclical exposure here. So we'd like to benefit from increasing automobile production. We'd like to benefit from increasing construction, residential and non-residential. I mean, those would be examples of industries where, we can see plenty of potential for them to improve. And I can tell you right now, the average factory in the United States has never been older. The average automobile, the average home, the average appliance, the infrastructure, has never been older. The Bureau of Labor Statistics actually tracks this by its depreciable life. So we want to take advantage of where the pent-up demand is. So the answer for 2021 is simply where the pent-up demand is in an increasing economy. Now, if the economy starts to slow in the second half of 2021, we will deal with that then. We're not going to get indications for what the second half of 2021 is going to be like, until 5 or 6 months from now, and we'll do what we have to do, just like we did what we had to do earlier this year.
David, where do you see the opportunities in a global market? Because here in Canada, and let's even talk about here in Alberta, yeah. There's not a lot of optimism about our major industry of oil and gas here. And so many Albertans kind of just say the world's going to hell because of that. There's a whole bunch of opportunities around the world. So where do you see them? And is there any geographical location that you say this is an opportunity for us to invest in?
We generally look at the world that way. So part of my view on Canada is obviously informed by the the extreme presence of extractive industries in Canada. And, they had their 10 years in the sun during the 2000s. And when Canada goes out of favor, we know from experience, it goes out of favor for much longer periods of time than it's in favor. We had a strong commodity cycle in the 1970s, and then the next strong commodity cycle was during the 2000s. When we look at the rest of the world, that kind of overhang doesn't really exist. There are twice as many people living in countries that import commodities as export them. So it's actually very good for the global economy. The commodity prices are weaker than they were during the 2000s. We also have the ability to benefit from the consumption patterns, that are kind of, well, really the opposite. I mean, to be blunt, nobody's going out there trying to use more energy. Everybody wants to save money on energy. So, for instance, there's an increasing use of electronics in cars. We even have electric cars and we have hybrid cars. I don't think we have a semiconductor company left in Canada, but one of the fastest growing parts of the semiconductor industry is automobiles. And part of the reason why is electrification, which is all part of trying to use less energy. So, we're not spending time worrying about the market for hydrocarbons. We're just trying to think unemotionally about how we can make money. And automobile production, fell from a low of 6 or 7 million units, I think, during some point in the second quarter. And it can go to 17 or 18 million units at peak of cycle. And again, automotive is a very interesting opportunity from another viewpoint, which is we've seen this tremendous increase in household formation. People are moving out of the cities because they've seen that pandemic is a risk if you live in the cities. And that means potentially more automobiles per household. So it might be the biggest automobile market in terms of the number of units we've ever seen. It's almost a global phenomenon where we see this deurbanization. People are moving out to the countryside where the population density is lower. And, it just appears to be a much healthier lifestyle. Certainly, if you're only looking at it from a COVID point of view, the countries that did best have the lowest population density. Mm-hmm. So that's is good for automotive. And it's also, you know, again, another area in that I just pointed to that I think is very good, as well as housing. I mean, household formation had been held down for a very, very long time, and it's exploded, and it's heading back to trend. And I think we're only building 1.5 million homes, and, you know, we've built over 1.5 million single-family homes with a smaller market. And I think you're going to find that the statistics, you know, there's been so much urbanization globally, just the deurbanization. You know, you could see housing markets strong everywhere in the world. They're certainly strong everywhere where we're looking in terms of the new home construction and home improvement, home repair.
That's fantastic. And I think that's where the thing is that we have to remember is
yes.
Emotionally make money.
Unemotionally make money. Yeah. Emotionally lose money. Unemotionally make
Thank
money.
You.
Yeah, there we go.
Thank you.
Let's be clear on that.
I think it's being unemotional here is really critical, because part of the issue is that, let's say for the sake of argument, there's a vaccine tomorrow. We're still in an improving economy. We had a global recession. We're coming out of recession. Every time that happens, more cars are sold, more homes are sold, more people renovate, more people repair, more appliances are sold, et cetera. Could it be the biggest cycle ever because of deurbanization if that continues? Sure, maybe not. But you've got the economy in your favor at this point.
There we go.
David, we're going to have to cut it there and go to commercial break. I want to thank you again for your time today and all of your input.
You're welcome.
Been joined by David Fingold, Vice President and Senior Portfolio Manager at Dynamic Funds. My friend, let's put all this together in a strategy that takes people all the way through retirement.
Unemotionally make money and bulletproof your retirement. We're going to discuss that on Tuesday, December 8th, 7 p.m., live online. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com. That's morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
Stick around after the break if you fear volatility. We're going to make it your friend. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.